Cat scratch fever has hit Tacoma. This is Louisa Beal with Radio Tacoma. I'm a retired veterinarian and wanted to review the law that was just passed. On December 5th, 2023, Tacoma City Council voted to ban cat declawing in Tacoma, except when conducted by a licensed veterinarian for a therapeutic purpose. The ban on cat declawing in the city of Tacoma will go into effect on March 31st, 2024. Declawing is the amputation of the terminal bone of the paw where the claw is produced. It has been done to prevent the cat from damaging furnishings or people. It is not a pretty procedure. Most vets dislike it. Cats certainly dislike it. And next spring, it will be illegal for veterinarians to declaw cats in the city of Tacoma. I have declawed cats myself. Let me tell you about a declaw I did. It was on an older cat, not the best age for a declaw. But if he weren't declawed, he would need to be rehomed. Not an easy thing to do for an old cat. The cat belonged to my aunt, who was elderly herself. She had a long, lovely relationship with her cat, but she had recently had a heart valve replaced and was on blood thinners. Every time the cat jumped onto her lap, the claws would make pinpricks in her skin and she would bleed. She was covered in bruises. The options were trim the cat's nails, which she was unable to do, never allow the cat to get near her, rehome the cat, euthanasia, or declaw. Not an easy decision, but she opted for the surgery. If that happened next spring in Tacoma, I would be liable under the new declaw ban in Tacoma. It defines therapeutic for the cat, not the human. I wanted to find out more details of the new law, so I spoke with Dr. Jennifer Bennett, who is the chief veterinary officer at the Tacoma Pierce County Humane Society. I spoke with her about this new law that bans declawing in the city of Tacoma. So thank you for meeting with me.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I mean, this is really sort of a landmark thing. So what was the role of the Humane Society in the ban? I read on the blog on the website that the Humane Society had a significant role in this.
We did, and we were honored because we were actually approached by Councilman Hines and asked to be a partner in crafting the legislation, as well as to give our input on just initial thoughts about moving forward with this incentive at all. And that really spoke to us by telling us that they see us as leaders of animal welfare in the community. So we were very proud to be a part of the initiative.
Okay. Well, that's really good. So this whole thing was kind of begun by the city council, and then they approached you.
That's right. I believe a constituent of the council actually approached them with the topic earlier this year, and that really stuck with them as something that made a lot of sense and that they wanted to do more investigation about. And when they were in the stages of actually wanting to draft the policy, that's when we were approached. And so we started working with them a few months ago to actually help them answer their own questions. What do we think about it? What would our response be? What do we think the support from the community would be, as well as seeking our own expertise in cats and cat handling and behavior and veterinary care in my case. And so we kind of put all of our heads together to create what ended up being the final document.
Okay. So what sorts of things did the Humane Society consider in drafting this legislation?
Well, we really look at what comes through our doors on a regular basis. And I personally have worked at many humane organizations during my career as a veterinarian. So bringing that to the table as well, we were able to say a lot of us have seen cats being surrendered for what commonly manifests as other kinds of conditions that can often be traced back to decline problems. And so those are most commonly problems with litter box use because that has a lot to do with texture and sensation for the cat's paws. Problems with pain and arthritis in the limbs and paws, and just really anything that makes a cat challenging to live with or to manage. One of the things as a veterinarian that we have in our heads is what could this be caused by? And it is on the list of things we will often look for, especially if we can tell right away the cat has been declawed. So as an organization, we say these animals are likely to come to us when this procedure has failed. And that obviously increases the chance that that cat is going to be challenging to place with someone else unless we can rectify the situation. So we brought that perspective to the table, as well as just our general national animal welfare platform, which is largely, it's not just us, but the Humane Society of the United States and the ASPCA and many other national organizations, including the AVMA, which is the American Veterinary Medical Association, all have statements in support of banning non-therapeutic cat declawing.
Yeah, I read the statement from the American Association of Feline Practitioners also. So
Yes.
there's a lot of, So what would be considered therapeutic?
Yes, therapeutic decline, and I have actually recommended one of these in my career, so they're fairly infrequent is the point there, but there is a place for therapeutic decline, and it has to do with balancing those things out. In some cases, it's masses or tumors that might appear on the toes or nail processes of the cat. Some cats will get severe dermatitis issues or nail bed infections and fungus where they're really self-traumatizing because the condition of the nails and skin. I've had an autoimmune case. And in those cases, you're really trying medical management as long as you can. But in some cases, you just simply need to remove the tissue. I'm thinking of the last one that I oversaw. I actually sent that case to the veterinary school, and you can have the procedure done by laser, which is a lot more precise and helping you to avoid some of the complications that the procedure can cause. But you're still left with possible outcomes that may, you may have gotten rid of one problem, you may end up with another, but in those cases, you're really looking at the overall quality of life.
Right. I had a practice for 10 years back in the 90s, and of course, I was approached about decline, and so there were several that I did. One of the ones that I performed was actually for my aunt's cat, and at the time, my aunt, I think she had had a heart valve replaced, and she was on blood thinners. And so every time her cat jumped up, she would have a bleed. And so at that point, she asked me, can we declaw? And so I did it. But my question now is, would that be considered therapeutic? I mean, it's certainly not therapeutic for the cat.
Right. That scenario actually came up in the opposition to this bill, and actually the Washington State VMA did oppose this document. And I know that organization very well, and I'm a member and have a lot of colleagues there. And so this was one argument that was brought up, which is that you're right, that's not a therapeutic use for the cat, that's a therapeutic use for the human in that scenario. And so they had discussed bringing up a modification for human physician prescribed or indicated declaw. Now, that doesn't seem to have worked its way into the legislation, and it certainly is a rare situation, but that really is also addressed by many national statements. Overall, the approach there is typically do as many preventatives as you can. Use soft paws, which are silicone, right, on the nails. Use cat handling sleeves, and they're nice, comfortable, flexible long sleeves. Do things that all give the cat an alternative. So, of course, plenty of scratch posts and training for that. In the end, it is a personal choice about how you're going to live with that animal. We did not feel at the shelter that that was a reason to not move forward because it is a rare situation. There are a lot of alternatives. And even in those situations, you may end up with a cat that can't be lived with because of the outcome of the surgery.
Were there any other discussions against in the legislation for the declaw ban?
There were very few, and I know that they actually compiled a whole list of all the responses, which was enormously in favor. The only dissension that I am aware of is the one I mentioned to you, and then just a general side noting about the idea in general of government intrusion into personal practices. And I think that that is maybe more of a philosophical, individual approach to these issues, because you could apply that to more than one thing. We definitely have a good track record of cat declaw bans and other similar, what we call consider cosmetic procedure bans in many other states and cities. And we have not seen that progress to, a major change in the way that professions are told they can practice. So I'm also licensed in California, for example, where these bans have been in place, including additional bans for ear cropping and tail docking in specific parts of the state for many years, actually. And I think what you find when you talk to colleagues in general is that most colleagues just really don't want to perform these anyway. It's hard to find folks who are doing them really as a routine for those non-therapeutic reasons.
One of the things that I am trying to find out, and you may know if you're familiar with the legislation, is how this would be enforced.
Right. And that is something that the Humane Society, won't be a part of, but we did ask about that because that part of the draft was talked about the penalties, so that there's a $500 penalty to the veterinarian for performing the procedure if the procedure was not considered therapeutic. And so it's unclear, and sometimes it's unclear until someone challenges it where that comes in. So if that's somebody turning someone in, the pathway for that is not spelled out, as I recall from the legislation. It simply says if this is performed, this is the penalty.
Okay. But it's like who would turn them in? I mean, I can't imagine a client having going to a vet and having a declaw and then turning around and turning them into animal control.
Right. It probably would be a situation more, maybe it would be someone who, again, I don't want to throw people under the bus, but perhaps someone got wind that someone did it with their own cat and didn't think it was appropriate. Well, where'd you get that done? Perhaps it is someone who takes a cat into a rescue organization and notices the cat is declawed, and they come with their veterinary records, right? We get medical records all the time when animals are surrendered to us. So I could see someone maybe looking through their. Again, would an individual choose to do that? That would be an individual question. And it's obviously not a penalty that is a massive deterrent for someone that really is interested in doing that. As a veterinarian, of course, we know we're accountable to the Veterinary Board of Governors for our practices. And at the state level, this is not an illegal procedure, but I suppose a disgruntled member of the public could make a board complaint, but this is really specific to the city of Tacoma.
Okay. So actually, if someone really wanted their cat declawed, they just go outside the city.
Exactly. And it's not that it has such heavy claws, pardon the pun, into the public, right? It's the statement and the sentiment behind it that, hey, this is not an okay routine thing to do for convenience sake. And a lot of us talked about this when we were drafting the legislation. Even those of us on the administrative team at the Humane Society said, oh, hey, my parents used to get their cats declawed all the time. We didn't want them scratching the sofa. And that was culturally very acceptable for, like many things, for a period of time. And we just have more, and the goal is not to say those people were bad. It's to say, hey, we've got more information now. We now know that while it may have seemed like a great solution in the short term, there's so many other alternatives. But also, we know that we see long-term consequences in cats that just do not do well. I know if I've got any indication of those things I mentioned earlier, poor litter box use, arthritis, sensitivity, biting behavior, things like that, I'm going to actually x-ray the feet. And I'm surprised how often I will find declaws or partial remaining phalange bones that are probably, or sometimes it could be a neuroma that's formed in there, right? A nerve ball of tissue that is very suspect for causing that. And sometimes we can do some additional surgery to try and relieve that situation. Sometimes we're left with, nerve sensitivity pain and sort of management physically. So it's really not about saying, hey, everybody, you were all bad in the past, but saying we recognize now that there's a better way to approach our cats when we have, a desire to not have scratching.
Okay, because it seems to me like this ban that's just been passed is really part of the whole education process for cat owners.
Absolutely.
Again, because I practiced back in the prehistoric days, and it was okay. So you got a kitten, so you get them vaccines, and you get them spayed and neutered, and you get them declawed, and you go on your merry way. And I think that that mindset has truly changed.
Very much so. And that really goes along with, as an industry, the animal welfare and humane organizations have also changed the nature of what they do. We're working on this on a number of levels. We often are still encountering lots of members of the public who think we are the pound. And of course, that's a very antiquated term, but a lot of people grew up knowing that term. And even the shelter indicates that we are harboring and keeping animals, when in reality, the goal of our organizations is very much more of a community service and a community triage center. And that's what we're becoming now. I've been a vet for also eons, 16 years. And even in that, and I've spent the majority of my time in sheltering. And the really, even in that time, we have seen it a tremendous change from bring everything down, let's keep it, let's take things away and rehome them. And now it's, hey, how can I keep your animal out of here by helping you stay together as an animal-human unit? Because we know how important that human-animal bond is. Many animals, most animals already have a home. They're not looking for a home, they're looking for services. So the education piece is very much wrapped around how can we help you stay together? You've already found each other as a human-animal pair, or how can we help you with permanent placement? We don't really want to keep animals forever in a place that's not a home. It's not a permanent destination. So yes, we actually have a whole humane education coordinator and program at the Humane Society, and that is really the future of where we're going with a lot of our topics that we want to provide for the community.
And that's vital. That's truly vital.
Yeah, it's the fun part, right? It's the exciting part of being in this type of industry is to, yes, it's very, obviously as veterinarians, we love to get in and fix something. And I feel very practical in this space because I can often do that in a much more streamlined way than when we have clients involved. But I also want to essentially work myself out of a job. If we didn't have as many stray, or animals in need, right? They wouldn't be coming to me. And so a lot of our time is spent, how can I help? How can I help prevent you having to need to come here or to relinquish? And so this cat declaw ban is really one small step of saying, hey, for this population of animals, this really isn't a great idea because, there's great research studies out there, even as recent as 2021, showing that the fear was that cat declaw bans would increase shelter relinquishment because, oh, people wouldn't want to keep their cats. It's actually decreased it because it was leading to these medical problems that then led to relinquishment. So we are, that's the, as I said, the fun part of the job is to think about strategizing around how to actually work ourselves out of some of these cases to begin
Yeah,
with.
perfect. Well, is there anything you'd like to add before we close?
I just wanted to, I really would like the community to know that based on what we were just talking about, we really are a community resource center and a community services center, and we'd really like to allow people to encounter their Humane Society, whether it's in Tacoma or wherever they live, as a community resource, much like you might think about the YMCA or other human support services. And that there are not just one or two options these days. There's a lot of options. We have a pet food bank to support people. We have items in there like leashes and pet clothing for cooler weather if that's a need. We do have options for spay-neuter vouchers and case-by-case medical support. So the old message of if you have a problem, or if even if you find a stray animal, bring it on down and just drop it off. That message is not what we want people to hear anymore. What we want is reach out, call or email, and tell us what the concern is, and let us show you that there are often a lot of options and solutions we can connect you with before we get to that is the final, that's the only option. So we're really wanting to be promoting ourselves as a resource center.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Thank you. Thank you so much. So I've been talking with Dr. Jennifer Bennett, a veterinarian at the Tacoma Pierce County Humane Society. And thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Lisa. It was a pleasure to meet you.
In our conversation, Dr. Bennett said that the WSVMA, which is the Washington State Veterinary Medical Association, opposed the ban. So I looked online at the paper written by their task force in 2014 to see what they had to say. One of the comments stood out for me. It reads, "I would prefer if we had more control instead of less when it comes to how we decide to take care of clients that come to us freely and the pets they trust us with. I would prefer that we decide how we want care to be regulated instead of it being decided by those who have never performed said procedures or by those who have no veterinary medical experience at all, for that matter." I also spoke with some of my veterinary colleagues about this issue. For various reasons, they declined to be interviewed. One was concerned about people spying on veterinarians in order to turn them in. How else would the authorities find out? Another veterinarian said that they didn't know of anyone performing routine declaws these days. Declawing might be done if the owner is immunocompromised or has a bleeding disorder, but as Dr. Bennett said, that is not a protected procedure under the law that was just passed. The humans at risk would need to give up their cat. One was quite outspoken. They said that this was an emotional issue and pushes a hot button, much like the abortion debate does. When politicians take on these issues, emotions run wild. And that can't be good. I think of it as cat scratch fever.
Cat scratch fever. Cat scratch fever. Cat scratch fever. Cat scratch fever. Cat scratch fever. Cat scratch fever.